Are you listening to us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or any other platform where you can leave a rate or review? Do you like what we're doing? If the answer to all of that is yes, please consider quickly giving us a 5-star rate. And if you wouldn't mind leaving us a nice review, we greatly appreciate that as well. Okay, let's do this.
Hello, welcome to the Ghosts of Harrenhal. My name's Simon.
And I'm McKelly.
Thank you for joining us for episode 227 of our chapter-by-chapter book review of A Song of Ice and Fire by George Martin. Today we'll be discussing chapter 1 of A Feast for Crows, which is named The Prophet.
Why does it feel like we're starting all over again?
Focus on the 227, not the
227. One. Every time you read the episode number, I get a little bit impressed with us. Is that bad? I don't know.
Well, I have said before, you are easily impressed.
I am. Anyway, so what we're going to do is we're going to chat about the chapter and try not to spoil any future plot points for you. And hopefully we're going to provide you some entertainment along the way.
We'll summarize what happened, discuss our thoughts on it, provide some useful background, compare it to the television show, indulge in a little pedantry, and cover some relevant news and listener correspondence. Be sure to check out our show notes. They'll provide some additional information about the characters and other things of note in this chapter. How are you, McKelly?
I'm doing all right. Happy Valentine's Day, my friend.
And to you. a co-worker of ours said, I hope you do something romantic with your wife later. I said, I'm recording a podcast with McKelly. So that's what I do for romance.
I guess. I was running a few minutes late. I got down here about 5 minutes later than the time we normally start. And it's because I was out to dinner with my Valentine. No, not Stacy. She's not even in town. My baby girl.
Oh.
Molly and I went out to dinner. I got her flowers.
Who goes out to dinner on Valentine's Day at all?
Not a real dinner.
Oh.
We went to a fast food burger place.
Okay, that's okay.
Yes. So earlier today, I went out, and every year I get her flowers, and I usually get her a box of chocolate hearts, but this year I went outside the box and got her a thing of cupcakes instead, like red and pink cupcakes. And
I've lost track. Who's getting these? Your wife?
No, my daughter.
No, your daughter. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Stacy's out of town. She's taking care of her mom. We just had surgery this morning. So we celebrated this past weekend, Stacy and I. So it's not like we have a romanticless relationship. She's just not here. So
yes, I understand. I, as you know, I'm quite cheap. I mean, you and I sort of out cheap each other, but I'm pretty cheap. I'm also not very good at buying gifts, but I wrote Carson a letter for Valentine's Day.
Oh, how nice.
And I got ChatGPT to do it. And
good thing she doesn't listen.
It was so bad. ChatGPT's, it wasn't bad. It was perfectly acceptable as an AI writing a love letter.
Right.
But I didn't use a single word of it. I was like, I'll forget it. Because it just sounded like a computer telling someone they loved them. You know,
right.
Like, that's no good.
There was no heart. There was no heart.
Exactly. My letter was unmistakably my voice. There was no way it could be anyone else.
You know? Right. Yes. Well, I was walking out of the grocery store with my flowers and my cupcakes, and another guy was walking out of the grocery store doors at the exact same time I was, and he looked over to me and said, looks like everybody's got the same idea. And I was like, yeah, I guess so, except these are for my daughter. And he was like, oh, well, that is different.
he probably said, you've got very strange ideas.
Yeah.
So, also, if you get advice for all our lame male friends, listeners, who fail to deliver on Valentine's Day. Do you remember my Christmas quiz from last year? 2022, I mean, not 2023. One of the questions, actually, this might be even older than that. I think you did this quiz. Do you remember my Valentine's question?
Yes. It was something to do with St. Valentine,
it
right?
was, yes. So the reason there is a Valentine's Day is because February the 14th is St. Valentine's Saints Day. But St. Valentine, the Catholic Church determined that St. Valentine, there's no record of this person ever existing. There's no record of what this person did. There's simply zero historical record. And as a result, they stripped him of his sainthood.
That's right. I recall this question. Yes,
so
yes.
You only get a Saints Day if you're a saint. He's no longer a saint.
Day's gone. Just February 14th again.
Exactly.
Back to the 14th.
Exactly. I'm not sure it's going to win any friends when you make this argument explaining why you bought gas station flowers at the last minute, but
but it's an excuse if you got if it's it's a pillar to lean on if you need it, I guess. So you and I had a we had a work chat earlier this week. Yesterday, was it?
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, it was yesterday or the day before. We had a quick work chat.
Yeah.
You were asking me about some stuff and we were doing it over a video call. Uh-huh. And much like right now, over your right shoulder, you were in your work office, not in this office.
Yes.
Here, but over your right shoulder, there was a picture on the wall. And after we got off the call, I started chuckling to myself because I recalled a story about that picture. And I wondered, have you ever shared with our friends and listeners here about the time you thought the picture on your wall was moving?
Oh, I know what story you're talking about. I feel it's been said on the podcast, but I'll do it anyway. Do we keep a database of these?
I know, we need someone to step up for that.
Yeah.
Maybe Kim. Kim listens to just this part. Our coworker Kim.
So the story was, so I have a picture which is from a previous job. It was a farewell gift from a previous job, which is on my wall at work. And well, actually, at the start of this story, it wasn't on my wall at work. I took it to work to put it on my wall at work,
right.
And I banged a nail into my into the wall at work. McKelly is laughing already because he knows the punchline of this. You're not supposed to do this at work, by the way. You're supposed to ask facilities to come and bang a nail in for you, but I just banged the nail in myself. And I hung the picture, and I hung it behind my desk so that sitting at my desk, I could look at the picture. It was in front of me.
Right.
And I looked at the picture, and I was like, yep, perfect. That's just the right spot for it. Very happy. And then later in the day, I looked at the picture again and I was like, I feel like I've put that picture a little bit too low. That's a shame. But I was like, no, it's too late now. It's fine. Everything's good. But then later in the day, I looked at the picture again and I was like, no, I was right. The picture's in the perfect spot. I don't know what you were thinking. And then later in the day, I thought, you know what? That picture is too low. And only then did I remember that I have a desk that moves up and down and that... And in actual fact, the painting wasn't moving up and down the wall. I'm just really stupid.
The desk was moving, not the painting. Oh, I love that story. That's one of the best.
That was funny. I mean, it was one of those things that like made me laugh out loud when I realized how dumb I was being.
Good stuff. Oh, that never gets old.
I don't know. I'm not sure if I've ever told you this one. This is one of my favorites as well from my house. We were tidying up. No, I have told you this story. I'm pretty sure it's been in the pod as well. We were tidying the house and we had all the books off the shelves and there were piles of books all over the floor. And I was alone in the house and I walked through the room where all the books were and I tripped over a book. I kicked it with my big toe. And I was like, oh, and I looked down and it was a big book called You Are Psychic. And I thought to myself, I should have seen that coming. And I, alone in the house, cracked up at my joke. I was like, ah, that's so funny.
Had anyone else been there, they probably wouldn't have laughed as hard. But
you... Oh, probably not, yeah. I probably wouldn't have laughed as hard either, because it's kind of embarrassing to laugh that hard at your own jokes. But it was kind of just the perfect thought for when you kick a book called that. Just one last thing about how well our wives know us. So the other day, Carson said to me, hey, are you using that SPF moisturizer I bought for you on doctor's orders? And I said, not every day. And she said, you haven't even broken the seal, have you? I was like, no, I haven't.
No, I haven't.
I thought my lie was good. I mean, it was the truth. But...
Right. You're not every day. In fact, not any day. But that's the thing.
She saw straight through it.
I bet if I go over to that bottle right now, it's still sealed.
No, don't. Yeah. Let's get down to business, shall we? How did we leave Aaron Greyjoy? Because it is the prophet. Aaron Greyjoy is the eponymous prophet of this chapter title. Last we saw of Aaron Greyjoy, who's also known as Damp Hair, who, if you'll remember, I was, again, quite stupid, thought it was Damfair for a while.
That's, I was just listening to the chapter before I came down here, and Roy Dutrice says Damfair, like a pH but, I mean, sound.
It's Damp Hair, yes. Surely.
It must be, yes, but I think a lot of people think, when they see it, Damfair.
Okay. Well, I feel better. So last we saw of Aaron, he was welcoming his nephew Theon back to Pyke. He made Theon kneel in the mud and then poured seawater over Theon's head and then disabused Theon of his vision of waltzing in and being anointed heir to the Seastone Chair, as Balon would never hand over the Iron Islands to a Stark. Later, Aaron accompanied Theon to harry the stony shore. When Theon made for Winterfell, Aaron continued the reaving along the stony shore before eventually, reportedly, returning to the Iron Islands. We'll find that that report is true in a moment.
Right.
McKelly, why don't we give the summary of this one?
All right, well, Aaron, Damp Hair Greyjoy, prophet of the drowned god, is busy drowning men off the shore of Great Wick. The three previous men drowned with dignity. The current young man isn't taking it as well. He's struggling for air as Aaron holds him underwater. It takes 5 men in total to hold the boy under before the bubbles and struggles finally stop.
It's then that Aaron notices that 3 men on horseback are watching him from the shoreline. One of the youths in the trio is a son of Godold Goodbrother, a lord of Great Wick. Aaron does not have the time for the men at the moment. Time is of the essence. While his drowned men form a prayer circle over the dead body, Aaron kneels beside him and gives the boy the kiss of life over and over until water erupts from the boy's mouth in choking coughs.
With the boy returned to life, Aaron offers the customary refrain on the Iron Islands. What is dead can never die. The boy responds through coughs, but rises again harder and stronger. Only then does Aaron give his attention to the 3 outsiders. The good brother youth named Gormund says his father wishes to see Aaron.
Aaron has little interest in this summons until the boy adds that the king is dead. Aaron feels the sea itself tremble with those words. He'd seen his eldest brother, King Balon, within the past month, and though Balon seemed to have aged while Aaron had been gone harrying the stony shore, he seemed healthy enough. Gormund adds that the king fell from a swaying bridge at Pyke.
Aaron will see Lord Gorold and takes Gormund's horse to ride with haste for Hammerhorn. It is dark by the time the priest reaches the landlocked seat of House Goodbrother. Aaron finds Lord Gorold with his daughters, son, and his maester. Aaron insists Gorold send all away, including the maester. The man obliges, but insists that the maester stays. Aaron, who has a strong distaste for any man who'd willingly wear a chain of servitude, says he'll leave instead.
Damp Hair makes for the exit, but a sentence from the maester stops him cold. Euron Crow's Eye sits the Seastone Chair. Aaron utters only a hoarse, tell me. Aaron's brother Euron arrived in the Iron Islands the day after King Balon's fall. He wasted no time in claiming Pyke and the title King. He since summoned all lords to Pyke to bend the knee.
That's convenient timing. Mm-hmm. Aaron can't believe it. Balon exiled Euron from the Iron Islands 2 years ago under penalty of death if he returned. Only a godly man may sit the Seastone Chair, and Euron worships only himself. Gorold asks of a succession plan. Yes, Balon wanted his daughter Asha to rule after hearing of his son Theon's foibles at Winterfell. Maester Muirhinmuir says that by right, the crown belongs to Theon or Asha if he's dead. But Aaron has no interest in Greenland laws. Aaron leaves and rides for Pebbleton.
Along the way, he considers the choices and determines that his brother Victarion is the only option to succeed King Balon. Yet Victarion is the younger brother and not one to go against tradition. That night in Pebbleton, Aaron wades into the sea and is struck by divine inspiration. The next morning, Aaron learns that Princess Asha is returning to the Iron Islands and plans to claim the Seastone Chair. The priest then addresses his congregation gathered along the shoreline. He proclaims that the king is dead, but another shall arise. Those gathered shout his name as the successor, but the priest shoots down the idea. He's a prophet, not a king. He was not made to sit the Seastone Chair, any more than Euron Crow's Eye. He commands that all make for Naga's Hill on Old Wick. It is there that the new king will be crowned. There will be a king's moot.
A king's moot.
This is the first non-named POV that we've had that wasn't a prologue or epilogue. This one was called The Prophet, not Aaron.
Right. But I mean, it was Aaron. He was the POV character for sure.
Yes.
So maybe maybe all of his POVs will be called The Prophet. You know, I don't know.
Could be.
Yeah. I will say, I liked in the summary that you gave homage to the first sentence of this chapter, because I think the first sentence of this chapter, I'm sure you were taught the same. We were taught English in different countries, but I'm sure you were taught the same thing. Try and have an opener which captures the attention. You know, the clock struck 13 sort of thing, you know.
Sure.
Let me just read the first sentence of this chapter. The prophet was drowning men on Great Wick when they came to tell him that the king was dead. I mean, that's a great sentence, right?
It is. It really is. Like, what is happening? I need to know more.
Exactly.
So impactful in just those few short words.
And just on that subject, actually, I don't know if Martin has improved as a writer as we've gone through these books, or maybe it's Feast for Crows does have a slightly different style than the previous books.
It does,
Not least the naming of the chapters as the prophet rather than by the name of the character. But something about this chapter really resonated with me. I loved him as a POV character. And particularly, I think, because there's a kind of like a surprise in it, because he's very religious, and very religious characters can be quite one-dimensional.
Sure, yeah.
Because they are very religious, and that occupies their thoughts and minds. But he actually, as the chapter goes on, he shows quite a keen mind for the politics and sort of like the ruling of the Iron Islands, not just... And also, it's nice that he is clearly one of the very few people who isn't ambitious for it for himself. Almost everybody else has some ambition behind their motivations, but not
agreed.
Him, apparently.
Yes, absolutely. And you could see right off the bat how much harder life is in the Iron Islands than in the Greenland of Westeros. Pretty much if you haven't died at least once, you're not living, pretty much how it goes.
To be fair, I mean, these people don't actually die. He just puts them underwater until their lungs fill up with water, and then they try to get it back out again and hope that they live. And they actually mention in this chapter that Dampere's never lost someone, but others who do the same rites do lose people quite regularly, which is makes it quite crazy. But I do like the fact that he disparages the Good Brothers for because they are a landlocked house, which is very rare, of course, on the Iron Islands, because the islands are quite small. That they only sort of like do the rites very token. They wet their heads like a christening, but they don't do it the way he does it.
Yeah, you know, on the Greenland in Westeros, the Septon, you know, anoints you with oils and song, but here the Damper literally kills you, and then when he brings you back to life, the other men punch you and kiss you to welcome you to the Brotherhood, a Brotherhood of Drowned Men, that is. We saw Gendry get initiated into the Brotherhood without banners. He just had to make some promises and stuff, if I remember correctly. There was no killing, although I guess Thoris could have done the same thing. That could be the initiation. Die and Thoris will bring you back to life.
Yeah, who needs a hazing ritual when the ritual is this mean, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah, but no, you're right. I mean, it's pretty impressive CPR skills. He would make one heck of a lifeguard if not for the intentionally drowning them first part.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's that.
He's got to keep him under lock and key until he's needed, you know.
Yes. Right. Keep him away from the pool until it's time.
We'll be right back.
Hello, friends. Are you ready to make some unforgettable memories? Well, if so, consider the Marriott Bonvoy program. Discover the perfect destination for your summer getaway and unlock exclusive deals on luxurious accommodations. With our affiliate partnership, you'll enjoy unbeatable savings and a seamless booking experience. Don't let summer slip away. Visit Marriott Bonvoy today and make this vacation season one for the books. Use our Ghosts of Harrenhal affiliate page to check it all out and buy Bonvoy points or give some as a gift. The link to our page is in the show notes.
So you're of the opinion that news travel has traveled slowly to the Iron Islands because Aaron thinks there are four kings.
Right.
We're really down to three?
Well, now we're down to two. But yes, we were before he knew Balon died, he was thinking there were still four kings. He was thinking it was Joffrey or Tommen, I guess. He probably still thinks it was Joffrey for Joffrey, you know, yes, true, how behind his information is.
Yeah, yeah. So you think Joffrey, Stannis, Robb, and Balon were the four he was thinking. Right, yes. Right.
And now we're down to two, at least until this King's Moot boosts us back up to three.
Yeah. So Aaron saw his brother Balon within the last month. He got back from his reaving on the Stony Shore. Remind us what happened.
Well, so
because I've got to say, I thought that he was just off having fun in Westeros. I didn't think that there was. I didn't know he'd come back even, and I did. Right. And it felt like his story. Oh, I'm remembering it now. He did travel with Theon and was supposed to sort of keep an eye on Theon. And
yes, and Theon was irked about that because he griped about being sent with not just his uncle Aaron but also Dagmer Cleftjaw. And he wanted his own assignment. And these two older men already had the clout that he felt like, you know, I'm just along for the ride. I want my own, you know, I want my own assignment. And the POV where Theon attacked one of the villages on the Stony Shore and they fought off the Wild Hares. Aaron actually drowned Benfred Tallheart, who was like the leader of the Wild Hares. It was a group of young men running around trying to be brave as a sacrifice to the drowned god. So he was there with Theon at the time.
So he has lost a few. He, you know, the ones he tries to bring back, he brings back. Yeah,
so. Yes, I guess so. When Theon left for Winterfell, he sent Dagmer Cleftjaw to Torrhen Square to lure Sir Roderick Cassel out of Winterfell so that Theon could slip into Winterfell and take the castle. And Aaron's job was to continue the effort on the Stony Shore.
The shore, yeah.
Yes. But, ultimately Theon's assignment of harrying the Stony Shore was just a distraction from the real attack, which was taking Deepwood Motte and Moat Cailin, which is done by Asha and Victarion, respectively. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I found it revealing that Aaron clearly held his brother Balon in a lot of respect and even awe. We've only really known Balon as a deeply embittered old bully. But Aaron thinks of him as a fierce and noble fighter, fearless and proud. And that's not the impression we've had of him. Of course, we've only known him very briefly in his later life, you know.
Yeah, and we saw him through Theon's eyes, and he was already wary of Theon having lived most of his life with the Starks on the Greenland. But clearly Aaron must support this plan for the Northern invasion because he keeps telling everybody that his brother Balon made the Iron Islands great again. And what was the biggest achievement was him trying to take over the North. And, you know, we've discussed the idea and we have felt like it seemed impractical and unsustainable. It's just too vast of a land and too few people, the Ironborn, and they're not suited for land battles, really.
Although, I will say, given what's happened in the North, the opportunity has become real, I feel. While the Starks still lived and were still the Lords of Winterfell, there wasn't a chance. But now, there really is. I mean, it's a free-for-all. You could have half the North without too much trouble.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, as long as they maintain control over Moat Cailin, because that will prevent Roose Bolton from getting his significant amount of force back north again now that Roose is Warden of the North.
But while your words are, we do not so, there isn't a lot of point stealing farmland.
True. Yes, that's true.
Pure and simple.
We do not so until now. Now we so.
we're going to make you lot so.
I will say that in background, we'll see possibly why he is so impressed with Balin's work when we learn about their father, Quellen.
Okay, good. Now, I'll say that when I read this and I saw how Aaron reacted to the idea of talking to Gorald Goodbrother in front of the Maester, I thought it was purely because he's a prophet of the Drowned God and the Maesters are from the mainland and they don't know anything about the Iron Islanders' ways. And so it's just a sort of culture clash and he doesn't want to talk Iron Islanders' talk in front of this Maester. But right. You think there's more to it than that. But we excluded from the summary a little bit more of why he really didn't like the Maesters.
Yes, just for brevity's sake. We know of the Greyjoy brothers, his brothers, Balon, Euron, Victarion, and then him, Aaron. But there was actually another brother who was named Euragon, and we find out in this chapter that this was the brother that was between, in, as far as sibling order goes, between Victarion and Aaron. And while their father, Quellen, and their oldest brothers were off fighting, Aaron and who he calls Yuri for Euragon were playing at finger dance. That's where they whip an axe back and forth at each other. And Aaron's axe took three of Yuri's fingers. Now, the usual way to address this, as we're told here in this chapter, is with fire and salt water. I assume they cauterized the wound. There was a wrinkle to this plan because Quellen's third wife was a piper of Pink Maiden. And so she was accustomed to, you know, the use of maesters in such a situation. So she let her maester sew Yuri's fingers back on. But unfortunately, he got an infection and he ultimately died. And so since then, Aaron has never trusted maesters. Yeah. But I think you're also right about the fact that he considers them outsiders is very much... Right. But accurate as well.
Can I just say about that particular maester? I mean, what a swing that was. I mean, like,
yeah.
Surely he'd never successfully done that before.
Right. He thought, I'll give this a try.
I'll give this a try on the Prince of the Realm here and yeah. See how it works out. It's crazy. Did he try it on a pig or something first? Just any...
Resew a hoof on.
Exactly. And find out that it doesn't work and it gets infected and the animal dies before you try it on a child.
Yeah, you know, that I hadn't thought about that. But yeah, that was a pretty risky just decision out of the blue. Like, I'm going to try and sew these fingers back on.
Right.
Is that something they commonly do in Westeros? I'm not sure.
I'm sure if they commonly do it, the patient commonly dies. Because... I mean, first of all, I mean, think about the microsurgery required to actually sew a finger back on. I mean, that's hard in this day and age. It's not an easy task.
Right. Yeah.
And even, I mean, there's nerves and arteries and veins and bones and what the hell are you thinking? Oh, yeah. Bit of glue.
Got this.
Get that? Yeah.
Bit of glue.
Yeah. So, but the maester got his comeuppance because when Balon returned... fatherless, whose father died in the fighting, Balon did the same to the maester. Chopped off his fingers and sewed them back on again.
He chopped off his fingers and had Quellen's, his stepmother, sew them back on.
Oh. And she was as qualified as the maester.
It worked just as well because the maester died as well.
So, as you ad-libbed in the summary... It's awfully convenient timing for Euron to arrive back after a 2-year exile, the day after the man who exiled you dies. Now, you're basically not even trying to hide your crimes at that point. I mean...
I know, right? So just real quick about the banishing. Yeah, I don't think it was mentioned in the summary. Balon banished his younger brother Euron for 2 years ago, said, never come back. If you do, I will have you killed. We're not told specifically why, but we will find out before too long.
Okay.
But it just feels like, Aaron should have been like, wow, that was really suspicious timing. He keeps blaming it on the Storm God, but he would have thought for a second, the day after you say.
Yeah.
Convenient.
Well, but I think in some ways he is kind of hinting at it, because he does blame the Storm God for Balon's death, the Storm God being in opposition to his own Drowned God.
Right.
But he also says that multiple times that Euron is not righteous, like not a representative of the Storm, of the Drowned God, and therefore in league with the Storm God. And so perhaps he is thinking it. But you're absolutely right. I mean, like, it wouldn't take Hercule Poirot to be, like, curious about the timely arrival.
Right. Well, it does come with a bit of the prophecy that the Ghosts of Highheart gave us.
What was the prophecy? Remind me of this prophecy.
Yeah, now, you combining the idea of the Storm God and Euron being in, you know, cahoots together does make some sense. But the prophecy certainly suggests that it wasn't a god that caused Balin to fall, that it was in fact a man. And the prophecy goes, I dreamt of a man without a face waiting on a bridge that swayed and swung, a drowned crow on his shoulder with seaweed hanging from his from its wings. So, you know, we've interpreted that as he hired a faceless man to that. Yes. That it was a faceless man that caused Balon to be pushed to fall off right. of the bridge. Now, the fact that there is a crow on the man's shoulder does lead you to believe that it might have been Euron who hired the faceless man.
Because Euron's name is
Crow's Eye. Euron Crow's Eye. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. So I was thinking, we were talking last episode about what Jack and Hagar was up to between leaving Arya and Harrenhal and showing up with Pate in Old Town. Possibly, maybe he is the Faceless Man's Westeros operative. You know, maybe he does all the Faceless Man work. I don't know. Yeah. So maybe it was Jack and Hagar that was up to that task.
Yep. Yeah. Puts him on the right side of Westeros to be in
To
be in Old Town.
Yeah.
I will say, if Euron did hire a faceless man, which I think is debatable, because I think there's reasons to think that maybe the faceless man here is Euron himself.
Oh, could be.
Not because he's a faceless man, just well, I have some thoughts about that, but they're spoilery. I'll leave them for another time. But if Euron did actually hire a faceless man, I wonder if he got a real deep discount because he offered to take him to Pike to commit the murder.
You can get on my ship, I'll sail you over.
If I was the faceless man, I'd be like, people will think it's you, you know?
You might want to wait a week.
I mean, I could be as faceless as you want, but if it happens the same day that you arrive back, they're gonna think it.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of thoughts that Aaron has in this chapter about how Euron is not the right guy to sit the Seastone chair. One way to discredit Euron in the eyes of voters is to point out that suspicious timing.
Right.
This guy's been gone for 2 years. It is a long way to sail from wherever in Essos all the way across to the Iron Islands. The fact that he showed up the next day is highly suspicious.
The thing that's sort of strange about that is because in my own mind, people would not be sad about Balon's demise, and so they would forgive Euron for doing it. But that's not Aaron's opinion. Aaron holds Balon in high regard. And so as an Iron Islander, I don't have Iron Island sensibilities. The Iron Islanders might indeed agree with you and say, hey, you can't just come in and kill our noble king and expect to take his throne.
Right. Yeah. Dave, at least who appears to be the top priest in the land preaches very highly of Balon, which you would think the commoners, just the average Islander Joe, would probably take that to heart.
Yeah. So we learned that of Balon's reaction to the news that Theon broke ranks and rushed to take Winterfell and then being defeated, he hopes he's dead. Feels like that's a very much a Balon reaction. He hopes his own son is dead so that he won't stand in the way of Asha's ascension to the Seastone chair. Should Balon ever die one day? Oops, already have. That is very typically Balon in terms of the harshness towards Theon. It is at least kind of gender neutral. He's supporting his daughter's claim.
Yes, yeah.
We can celebrate small victories.
Yeah, you're right. I hadn't thought about it quite like that. I mean, yeah, he does. I mean, Aaron is totally against the idea of Asha or any woman ruling the Ironborn. It seemed like Balin was much more open-minded when it came to that concept. Yeah. So there's that.
And it's funny because the way I think of Balon, I would think that he would land on the same person that Aaron has landed on, which is Victarion.
Yes.
As the oldest brother who isn't Euron.
Yes, right. You would think, just based on what we know about the Iron Islands and Westeros as a whole, that that would have been his thinking at that point. But Balon tells Aaron that the wolves made Theon weak, just as he feared that they would. And, you know, Aaron might appreciate Balon's work at restoring the Ironborn to power, but Balon's certainly not going to win any Father of the Year awards, hoping that his son is dead so that it doesn't confuse the succession plan.
Right.
Even Tywin would fight to get Tyrion back. I mean, he started a war in the Riverlands as a result of Captain Stark taking Tyrion hostage.
Yeah.
And, you know, but I'll just remind us all, we still don't know if Theon's dead or alive. Maybe Theon was the faceless man that pushed his father off the bridge.
Possible. So Aaron doesn't believe in the laws of succession because he sees those as rules of the Greenlands. But he does discount Theon as an heir, whether he's alive or dead, because he's so stupid. And that's not a... If you follow the laws of succession, that is not exclusion. That shouldn't exclude you. But if you make up your own laws of succession because you're Iron Islanders, it's a perfectly good thing to exclude someone for being too stupid.
Right.
But then he, unlike his big brother, does discount Asha purely because of her gender. And so, as we said, by the process of elimination, it leaves him at Victarion because he just won't countenance Euron. Even though by the laws of succession of Westeros, it probably would go to Euron, assuming Theon is dead.
Yes.
It probably would go to Euron. But
it'd be a bit muddled between Euron and Asha. And those are the two people that Aaron doesn't want. He did try to tell Theon when Theon came back to Pyke, you won't just be named heir because you're the oldest son. You haven't lived here in a decade or decade plus.
But I will say, rewinding back to that conversation with Theon, what he should have said was, just don't do anything too stupid, though, and you probably will be the heir.
In time. Right. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But yes. No.
Be patient. Theon. No.
Yeah.
Kept doing dumb things. And with Asha, it does seem like Aaron recognizes Asha's abilities and potential. There's one line that he thinks to himself that no woman could rule the Ironborn, even one such as Asha.
Right.
So he does think, you know, she is pretty remarkable, but simply because of the fact that she's a woman, he discounts her. And last we saw Asha, she was leaving Theon at Winterfell because Theon refused to abandon the castle and come with her back to Deepwood Mott. So, about Victarion, the issue that he has, Aaron's concern, is that Victarion is not a Renly. He's afraid he will stand aside because he's the younger brother and he respects the order of sibling primogeniture, I guess.
Yeah.
But there's a subtle reference to some sort of issue between the two brothers, Victarion and Aaron, because there's a line that goes something like, Victarion had no love for Euron, not since the woman died. And it just left at that. And we will get more details on all that in time, because there's definitely a story there.
We'll be right back.
This episode is sponsored by Audible. To get a free audiobook, or two if you're an Amazon Prime member, go to our exclusive URL, audibletrial.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can find the link in our show notes.
And the maester, you mentioned the maester's name, but I'm forgetting it. Muramir?
Muramir? Something like that.
He, because of the because of the rules of succession of Westeros, he thinks he's fully in Theon camp, and Aeryn clearly isn't. So that's another reason for him not to want any truck with these maesters.
Yes, exactly. So one thing Aeryn thinks about, he's got a long ride from Hammerhorn to Pebbleton, and he thinks about his capture during the war and his conversion from being a drunk to being a godly man. And the first thing he thinks about is his capture, and he recalls his longship, which he called Golden Storm, because everybody's got to have their thing, right? And apparently his was that he can urinate the longest and the farthest of anybody on the Iron Islands. So he called his longship Golden Storm. But it sunk during the Greyjoy Rebellion, and it was actually sunk by Stannis on Fury. And if Fury sounds vaguely familiar, it's because it is the flagship that Emery Florent was sailing at the Battle of the Blackwater. And
is no more. There.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. But he went down with the ship and then washed up on Lannisport and was held captive in Casterly Rock dungeons for the rest of the war. And so then he's thinking about his rebirth. And how he was drowned, then brought back to life, and became a godly man. But it doesn't seem like I would have thought. I think that up until reading this chapter this week, I assumed it was that time when his ship sunk that he, met the drowned god.
I would say so too. And I've read the chapter, and it hasn't changed my opinion. But you caught something I missed.
Well, it's just that. He's talking about being in the dungeons of Casterly Rock and still holding urination contests with the Westermen. And that just doesn't seem like someone who's all of a sudden found God isn't doing urination contests. And one of the things he says that Krakens could out urinate lions, boars, and chickens while in captivity there. The lions are obviously the Lannisters. The boars are the Crakehalls, and the chickens is how swift. So I just thought I would clear that up there.
Maybe the drowned god is the type of god who wants you to express your talents.
Yes, could be.
Aeryn has a talent. Just because he's found God doesn't mean he has to give up the talent,
Yes. Well, and they also, I went and read the line specifically. He washed up on shore at Lannisport, and it was said he was marched to Casterly Rock to be held in the dungeon. So it sounds like he was walking. Maybe they revived him. I'm not sure why they would bother reviving a dead Ironborn in the middle of a battle. So it seems to me like he didn't die there.
Yes, I assume he didn't actually die.
Yes. brought back to life, but revived.
I'm assuming that he got to shore by himself and went, thank God right. The drowned god saved me.
Yes, it could be. I always thought it was. And then this chapter, I would have just thought he would have made more of a point if that was the moment of describing, this poignant moment in his life. And instead he's talking about out peeing Westerman.
So when he gets to Pebbleton, he seeks sort of like peace and quiet of mind. So he does what you would do if you were a prophet of the drowned god. He wades out into the ocean, and there he has a revelation. And help me understand the revelation. The revelation leads him to call for a king's moot.
Yes. But so he's out there and he can feel the cold and the ocean water seeping through his body to his bones. And he is thinking about bones, and he thinks bones are what remain. Flesh decays, but bones stay. Bones are what we are. And then he's reminded of the most famous bones in the Iron Islands, which are Naga's bones on Naga's Hill. Now, Naga is a dead sea dragon whose bones rise out of the earth on Naga's Hill. We'll find out more about Naga and the Grey King that Aeryn references later. But that's where Kingsmoots take place. And so the thought of bones, he thought, oh, yeah, Kingsmoot, that's what we need here. ultimately, is how that played out.
Got it. So we do hear, and one of the reasons that a King's Moot is not a bad idea is because there are rivals here. Euron has claimed the Seastone Chair, and by proximity, he has it.
Right.
Others also can claim it, and Asha is summoning men to her side. She's gathering them at Ten Towers while Euron's in Pike.
And Ten Towers is the seat of House Harlaw, and her mother, Alaenys Harlaw, has been living at Ten Towers. So, you know, that would make sense. I doubt she'd want to roll up into Pike right about now.
Yeah. And Aaron wants no part of it, but he doesn't want to confuse the issue, but he thinks Victarion is the right person.
Yes. And all he really, he doesn't, I can't recall him overtly saying to everyone, Victarion is the person. Instead, what he does is says, I'm not the person
right
to be king, no more than Euron Crowseye is the person right to be king. And I, like you said earlier, I kind of respect his counsel more, you know, not angling for his own ascension to the Seastone right chair. I kind
he's,
of appreciate
he's another
that
non-Renly.
Yes, right. Yeah. But I think the King's Moot seems like a reasonable option to go with if you don't have a clear-cut heir here.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And the way the King's Moot is going to work is that all longboat captains who own their own ship will get to cast a vote. On Greenland, the Westeros, they would call that a great council, which has been evoked several times, most recently when Aegon V was determined to be the king of okay Westeros. But I liked the wording for the timing of the King's Moot. He said, when the moon had drowned and come again, that's when we will meet on Old Wick for the King's Moon. Like, they consider the new moon, you know, it's dipping into the ocean, being drowned, and then returning. I thought that was a pretty deep way to describe it.
Okay, take a brief intermission now for spoilers. Higher echelons of our sustainers get to hear the spoilers. Think about joining. All right. You mentioned you've got some background for us. Tell us why Balon Greyjoy is misunderstood, like Maegor.
Yes. Well, so Aaron tells us about how great his brother Balon is a lot in this chapter, and how he brought the Ironborn back to their former glory, and now it's up to those left behind to carry on his work. Well, some of that sentiment might stem from their father Quellan and his vision and efforts regarding the Ironborn. Unlike his son, Balon, Quellan wanted to actually bring the Ironborn more in line with the Greenland and its people and laws. Some of the measures that he took was to integrate them with the rest of the Seven Kingdoms, including freeing thralls, outlawing most reaving, discouraging saltwives while encouraging marriage with the mainland, and bringing maesters to the island. When Balon succeeded his father, he undid most of his father's attempts at civilizing the Ironborn, and his efforts to get back to the old ways ultimately led to the First Greyjoy Rebellion.
Mm-hmm. And actually, that's good information for why Aaron believes in Balon so much. It's because,
exactly,
as a prophet of the Drowned God, he would not want any of this, you know, integration with the rest of the Seven Kingdoms.
Yeah, because Septons are going to show up.
Right, that'll be next. Exactly. Yeah. All right, thank you. Good background. All right, comparison with the television show. Aaron does do a little bit of drowning, but it's at a later stage in the story, and it's specifically to a named character. And I will say, this is almost spoilery, but just one point that people noticed and commented on in the TV show. So the brothers are in order, Balon, Euron, Victarion, Aaron.
Yep.
In the show, Balon and Aaron were played by actors of the same age, I think 1 year apart. But Euron was played by an actor 36 years younger.
Oh, wow.
So
I remember, yes.
Was 36 years yes younger.
Huh.
And so maybe it was just dodgy casting, or maybe they were getting at something. I don't know
right
what. I don't like to speculate. Because for two reasons I don't like to speculate. One, because we don't speculate. And two, because I'm an idiot and I don't know what I'm talking about.
I do have an idea as to why that might be. If we backed up to spoiler
Yes.
There's a spoiler discussion.
Those who listen to the spoilers probably know what I'm talking about now. All right.
Yeah, that's really fascinating.
Yeah, yeah. But this scene didn't really happen. None of this really happened. Pedantry Corner, I just want to say, some of our listeners are young and impressionable. It is extremely dangerous to fill someone's lungs up with water.
I'd say.
Don't try it at home, kids, please.
No.
The other one I'll mention is Aaron worries that Victarion would be too bound by convention to try and usurp the throne from his older brother. But that sounds like the green laws that Aaron
right.
doesn't agree with. So all he has to say to Victarion is, we have our own rules here.
Right.
So there's kind of a mixture of things there, which I didn't quite understand.
I see what you're saying, yes. Mm. Yeah.
I mean, it's only minor. It's not serious.
Yeah, it's minor, but you're right. It's a little bit surprising when you put it that way. The Victarion is thinking along the lines of birth order,
right?
Hierarchy. Yes.
Of Westerosi laws of succession, basically. That's what.
Yes, yes, that's what it is, exactly.
But, you know, he's been in Moat Cailin for a while now. He's probably caught their ways. When he comes back, they'll probably call him a Stark.
That's right. He's made soft.
Exactly. All right. What about some news and notes?
Well, good news. We have seen an uptick in 5-star ratings on Apple Podcasts. Please keep up the good work.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Thank you.
Like we mentioned last week, we're working on addressing an unusual anomaly where the iPhone is the most used device to listen to us, but yet we're lagging behind our competition on Apple Podcast ratings. So please open that app and give us a quick 5-star rating and then move on with your life, but it will sure mean a great deal to us.
Super. We have a new Buy Me a Coffee sustainer. Constantine has joined as a landed knight level at the landed knight level. So cool. Thank you so much. We're looking forward to interacting with you, Constantine.
Yes, thank you. It's very exciting. We always get so excited when we get a new sustainer. It's such cool stuff. And we got a, speaking of Apple Podcasts, we got a review on Apple Podcasts from LCMCL3. And it's very short and to the point, and, you know, that is absolutely fine. Titled, Awesome Podcast. I love this, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. Best one out there. Perfect. Thank you.
Says it all. Says it all.
That's great.
Thank
you, LCMCL3.
All right, let's conclude this one. So, a succession battle looms in the Iron Islands. We haven't met Euron yet, but he's not arriving with a ton of positive press. Even his little brother reviles him, it seems. I have a question. So this Kingsmoot is being called by Aaron, but will Euron heed that call? He's already crowned himself. Why would he care to go to the Kingsmoot when he's already the king?
Yes, it would almost be like accepting, okay, fine, let's vote on it.
Right, yes, exactly. A dangerous game to play.
Yeah.
And as you've pointed out several times here, will the very obvious suggestion that he hastened Balin's demise hurt him? And I was put in mind of a quote from Macbeth, which I've adapted slightly, which is, what need he fear when none can call his power to account? He's already the king. Who can haul him in front of a jury to explain his actions?
I like that. I like it. Yeah. Well, one thing that concerns me for the Ironborn is that they're already in a bit of an uphill fight to win the North with, like we mentioned, not enough people to hold that vast land. And with winter coming on, will this whole Kingsmoot and power struggle cause them to take their eye off the ball enough to allow the North to push them out?
Interesting.
One thing, you know, we already talked about, Asha's on her way to Ten Towers, so she's already left Deepwood Mott. I'm sure she left a force and someone in charge there, but she's on her way back to the Iron Islands to stake her claim as queen of the Iron Islands.
Mm.
Victarion, his job is to secure Moat Cailin, which is incredibly vital that they hold that if they want to win the North. If he's also headed back for this Kingsmoot, I worry for them that they're taking their eye off the ball a little bit.
I'm thinking, here's a little prediction for you. I think Victarion is never going to learn the things that are happening. He's just going to hold Moat Cailin for all seven books, completely unaware that life has moved on without him, you know.
Yes. He's like
the guy in the jungle still fighting the war 5 years after it's over, you know.
Yes. That could be.
And also, just one thing. I just had a thought, actually. It would be interesting if one of the candidates said, by the way, claiming to be kings of the Iron Islands is going to bring a lot of heat down on us. I would like to be the ruler, but I'm going to go back to being lord of the Iron Islands, and I'll bend the knee to whoever wins the Battle for Westeros.
Oh.
I don't know if it's a popular position, but the alternative is what happened in the first Greyjoy Rebellion. Once they've sorted themselves out over there, they come and destroy you.
Yes, right. I was thinking about that too. They're just not a big enough society to prevent that from happening eventually. They could win some battles, but eventually they're going to lose the war.
Yeah.
So, yeah, makes sense. Although, I agree, I don't think that would be a very popular opinion
right. Amongst
the Ironborn.
And so for that reason, I don't think the succession battle will make very much difference. All the Greyjoys seem to have the same basic we-do-not-so mentality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aeryn seems a bit more drowned goddy. Victarion a bit more by the book. Asha, not exactly going to herald a feminist revolution, is she?
Yeah, probably not.
While her crew are dragging salt wives from the mainland, you know what I mean?
Right.
And
yeah, there's a bit of a double standard there.
Right. Euron, a bit more self-centered than the others, but when your entire society's model is pillage and plunder, selfishness is hardly going to be a trait that rules you out.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
So it feels like sometimes succession battles could make a big difference. For instance, the Night's Watch could have been very different depending on how that.
Yes. Went. Good
but
example.
Here, I don't think it's going to make an awful lot of tangible difference to the way the Iron Islands interact with the rest of this book.
Yeah. I mean, Aeryn, of course, knows these people a lot better than we do. And he very much is dead set against the idea of Euron sitting in the Seastone chair. It could be because he doesn't like his brother.
Yeah.
But it could be also that he's got a reason for it that we don't know yet.
But Euron, I think, has got the best claim. And probably will win in the absence of outside interference. What's he been doing for the last 2 years? Because that's the one thing that could make this part of the story important to the rest of the story. Is
right.
Has he been making alliances or friends elsewhere that could give the Iron Islands a push or a boost?
Excellent thought. Yeah, I like that thought.
Yeah. All right, what have we got next week? We're chapter two is all I know.
We are chapter two. We are off to another first-time POV.
Where are we going?
This time, we are going to Dorne.
Sandals and sunscreen.
That's right. You better crack that seal on your SPF lotion. Who will it be? Will we get a Dorne Martell POV, possibly a Marcella? Maybe it'll be the ship captain who took Marcella all around the narrow sea. I don't know.
He's in a bar telling the story of the longest journey he ever took.
You have to tune in and find out who it is, I guess.
Yeah. All right, there's four ways that you can help us. You could leave us a positive review, as LCMCL3 did. You could buy merchandise at ghostsofharrenhal.threadless.com. I was hearing from a listener that they really like the new logo that Dan designed for us.
Oh, yes. It's very popular. Yeah.
You could buy us a cup of Arbor Gold at buymeacoffee.com/ghostsharrenhal. You can join us at any of the various sustainer levels, as Constantine did, and there's a tier to match your budget and interest. Or you could just make a donation directly at ghostsofharrenhal.buzzsprout.com.
And if you're looking for more ways to interact with us, keeping up on the latest Ghosts of Harrenhal news and developments, well, you can check us out on our social medias. You can follow us on Twitter at Ghost Harrenhal. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Discord, and YouTube.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.